Welcome to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. I'm Susie Colick, the founder of Pretty Deadly Self-Defense, a self-defense program for women I developed based on my experiences as a violent crime survivor and my 24 years of training in the Japanese art of ninjutsu. I'm going to dive right in and in this episode talk about how trauma actually works in the brain and how it can affect the rest of someone's life. But before I go on, if you are looking for affordable, right-sized equipment for your self-defense classes, then visit the Pretty Deadly Shop. We sell our own branded body shields that are just the right size for women. They're light, they're not too bulky, they're easy to hold, they come with handles and straps, and they're robust and very long-lasting. Not to be biased, but we love them. Check them out at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com/shop. Okay, so back to our episode, how trauma works. I want to talk a little bit first about what trauma actually is. We are often presented with the idea of trauma as trauma being something really, really negative. But trauma is actually neutral. It's not negative or positive. It just is. What it actually means is an event for which you have no previous context. The example that I used to give in Pretty Deadly classes is obviously if I'm attacked, that can create trauma. But what can also create trauma is winning the Nobel Prize. That's the example that I used to give all the time. No one in my family has ever won the Nobel Prize. No one that I know has ever won the Nobel Prize or even been nominated for it. It's way outside of my lived experience, any kind of context within my life or the life of the people around me. So if I were to get a call at 5 a.m. from the Nobel Prize committee saying, hey, you've been nominated, or hey, you've won, that would create a kind of trauma for me. That wouldn't be a negative trauma, but it would provide information or an experience for which I have no previous context. The way that trauma works in the brain is it tends to kind of circle around and around and around while the brain tries to figure out a place to file it. Because there is no context for it, it sometimes can spin around for years because it has nowhere to put it, no place to categorize it. So going back to the Nobel Prize example, that means that I might, for the rest of my life, at every single Christmas party or family gathering, talk about that one time I got the call from the Nobel Prize committee. It's the exact same thing as if I'm talking about the one time I was attacked. When it's in a positive context, we can say, then over the years, that might just become kind of annoying. You know, at a Christmas party or family gathering, someone mentions Nobel Prize or any kind of prize, and here I come with my story again. People roll their eyes. Oh my God, she's going to talk about this again. But it's because it's actually a type of trauma in the sense of I still haven't figured out a place to categorize or contextualize this information. I may also be slightly addicted to the positive emotions that are associated with that news. However, when it's a negative trauma, we have the exact same experience. Our brains can circle around for years and years and years and never figure out how to contextualize or compartmentalize or categorize that information. It's basically just data with no file cabinet. The reason I'm talking about this in terms of self-defense is because, one, there's a very obvious connection. People often learn self-defense to either avoid trauma or because they've experienced violence and are trying to process trauma and make sure that they never experience it again. But there's another aspect of trauma that doesn't get talked about a lot, but that can come up in people's lives and in people's training, and that's what I want to talk about. That traumatic experience, whether it's positive or negative, as I said, it's really basically just neutral. That traumatic experience creates a split basically in your existence from before the incident and after the incident. And what the majority of people spend their lives doing when they've experienced a traumatic incident, especially if it's a negative traumatic incident, is they're desperately trying to get back to the moments before the traumatic incident. They can spend their whole entire lives trying to get back to that one moment before. Maybe as a way to possibly change the outcome, maybe just as a way to feel safe again. Regardless of the reasons why, that's usually how people are behaving. And that can express itself in daily life in the forms of frustration, of very short temper, sudden impatience, or feeling like no one understands them, or an inability to communicate. What they are not aware of is that they are, I don't want to say stuck in a trauma loop, but for lack of a better term, it would be stuck in a trauma loop, but that loop is actually trying to get, again, back to those moments before the traumatic incident actually occurred. It's not to relive the traumatic incident, it's to change the outcome. And this is where self-defense training can actually be really helpful, because while we don't necessarily want to recreate an incident for a client, we can help people learn how they can use their bodies in a more controlled and proactive way that helps them reconnect to themselves prior to that incident, and maybe can help them feel like they had more control. Trauma also shows up in the body in physical ways. So for women, I know it shows up for both men and women, but I am more specialized in how it shows up for women. For women, that can show up as severe menstrual cramps, as very painful childbirth, as really, really severe menopause symptoms. That can show up in terms of an inability to be touched, sensitivity to loud and sudden noises, to not feeling safe, exiting one's home. It can show up in a lot of different ways, but these specific ways regarding reproductive systems are also really important to be aware of. As trainers, we want to gently guide our clients back into the now, the moment that they're living in now, not to help them get back to that moment before and relive and reprocess, but we want to help them get back into their bodies right now, so that they know that they can trust being here. And we do that by helping them learn their self-defense tools. We don't do that necessarily by telling them to tap into their rage or their fear or hit harder or any of that stuff. What we do is say, this is how the body works. This is how you can move in a way that's really effective. It doesn't need to be perfect. It doesn't need to be exact. You just need to trust the power of that movement. Your clients will be able to take that information on their own and apply it to their own situations when they're ready to do that. The last thing you want to do as a self-defense trainer is kind of force a moment. You don't want to force your client to face things that they might not be ready to face and that you might not be ready to handle as a self-defense trainer, because if there is an outburst, are you equipped to handle that? And are you equipped to keep yourself safe? We're going to talk about that in the next episode. You have been listening to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. You can learn more about who we are and what we do and how to find a Pretty Deadly course near you by visiting our website at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com. And if you're a fitness or martial arts pro and you'd like to enhance your instructor skills, our certification programs are open for enrollment, and you can find them on our website at prettydeadlypro.com. This podcast is produced by Singe Network for Pretty Deadly, recorded in Berlin, and our original music is the track Icarus Wish by Berlin band Dead Centuries, used with permission of the artists.